Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard on Paramount Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 9, Vox. Aaron, penultimate episode. A lot of big reveals. A lot of big reveals. What'd you think of this episode?
I felt like I had to swim through a river of questionable sci-fi premises. A river of a questionable sci-fi premise shit to get to a like 5 minutes of pure bliss, just stupid idiot delight. I'm 12 months old and I've just had a change diaper and a bottle put in my mouth, just content with the security and safety that I'm feeling at this moment with my mommies and daddies on my favorite starship of all time, and it's never looked better. And I'm getting really fucking emotional about it. It's some dirty fucking pool to sell this much bad medicine with this much sugar, dude.
But it's amazing. Amazing. Because I'm in the same
amazing.
Way.
Yeah. It is. I was like, how? Oh, they are torching this season. This Borg shit is dumb as hell. Like, what? And then.
All right. I kind of like the idea. Maybe we can talk about that. When we get there. But yeah, I kind of like the idea that they were doing here. I mean, it seems obvious where they're going with this. There's only one possible solution here. The Enterprise is not going to take on the entire Federation fleet. So the only solution here is for Jack to step in and do something.
Or we have another Borg queen bouncing around the universe that's allied to Picard in the form of Jurati. So, like, I was thinking
remember her fate from last season.
So I didn't necessarily, because I was like, wait the fuck a minute. Why are we not friends with the Borg Queen? We left on entirely good terms. So apparently what we're supposed to understand is there's the Borg Prime, the one that is Locutus Picard and the one that confounded Janeway and the one that Janeway hit with a virus bomb. And they are still in the Delta Quadrant licking their wounds from that. Mm-hmm. There's also this alternate timeline Borg who got ripped into our timeline that was just like content to live out invisible from history, is what they say in the Memory Alpha. Thank you. The big Star Trek wiki. Mm-hmm. And they are the kind of these lost Borg sheep that were reunited with the Queen in the form of Borg Roddy. So like I think we have two competing Borg queens, and clearly who Jack is communicating with is the, like, it sounds like Alice Creege. I didn't see on the credits if it was, or if it's a impersonator or
it
what,
but also kind of sounded like Amanda Plummer to me, but surely not, right?
Oh, I definitely got a lot of Creege now. She's still doing work. Like, she just wasn't like she dropped off. She's done a lot of stuff. In fact, she was in all three of the Christmas Princes, which I am a huge fan of that franchise. Christmas Prince 4 win. But yeah, she's still kicking around in Hollywood doing stuff. She sounds exactly like the Borg Queen. It's one of the things I like about the Christmas Prince is when the Queen speaks, it's like the collective coming out at you. But yeah, so it's either Jack has to, or it could be, I wonder if they're doing like Jack and Jurati, they're gonna pair him up, they're gonna fully humanize the Borg by having a king and queen.
It's an attractive
each other.
Borg couple right there.
I still can't get over how Borgified Jurati looks so much like a garbage pail kid. look looks like a garbage pail kid. It doesn't, the mm-hmm. outfit mm-hmm. and the makeup and the lack of hair does not do her any favors, but sure.
Put her in a red dress, put a microphone in her hand, it all changes.
There you go. I'm back on board. I'm back on board. Put Jack in a nice tuxedo. That's an attractive Borg couple. That's mm-hmm. that's a plastic figure you'd like to see on a Borg wedding cake, which would be a cube and probably sure. tastes like shit. Borg wedding cakes, not good.
Yeah. Who gets the first slice?
Ooh, I think it's
part
the queen,
of a collective here.
But you know, it's a new type of queen, so she's going to, of course, shove the cake in the face of Jack, and everyone's going to laugh.
Gotcha.
The whole collective will chortle.
But everyone gets that experience, so really, they all eat it together.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just a little disappointed that after all this, it's the Borg. Out of nowhere.
Okay.
Out of literal
nowhere.
I can
understand that. Yeah.
And somehow the founders have been working with them, or were the founders like? That's what also doesn't make sense. Like, I guess
it
kind of makes
the rogue offshoot of the changelings, right? The like Amanda Plummer, the Vatic offshoot.
But do you think that Dominion can beat the Borg? Like, I feel like that's the thing, is like the Borg is kind of like an existential threat to the entire galaxy. Like,
you would think so, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess there is something to, you know, the enemy, my enemy is my enemy, or I'm so humiliated that I would rather see mm-hmm. myself go down if it takes my enemy down with me. So maybe.
Yeah, it's a real Moby Dick kind of thing. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't know. I thought the concept was pretty cool that you would like. Well, let's disregard the stuff about like changing Picard's whole backstory with Irrmaddic syndrome and all that.
Because I remember I was worried because you we had a sidebar. It's like, are they fucking uh-huh. with all good things? I'm like, they're, you know, like, first of all, you've got the split in the time, so they can't ever really destroy it. But also, it's like, I don't think they're gonna like retcon Jumanji syndrome.
Nope, they did. They 100%
did.
And I want to talk about that at some point. But if you disregard that for the moment and you say, is this idea of like using the transporters to effectively assimilate people a cool idea? I think yes. I thought it was very cool that they could like assimilate Starfleet from the inside without them even realizing it and then just sort of activate everybody.
Does it seem odd to you that none of the chief engineers or any of the technician transporter chiefs would notice that there's this huge fundamental change in architecture of the transporters?
Yeah.
Or did
I
they
mean,
just
chief
like
O'Brien would have.
By the 25th century, they're just like clicking okay to every EULA. Like,
sure, yeah.
Please accept this new genetic material that's going to be inserted into everyone. That's the other thing. The implication that transporters work like Jurassic Park cloning. Uh-huh. That they just keep like kind of like,
but they kind of always do. Like,
this is like 99% of a human being. We're just going to put the like. This is a far like my TNG technical manual, which is over my right shoulder, made it very clear that they do a quantum resolution scan of every human life form or ever any sentient life form and mm-hmm. beam it across with all of like quarks and gluons and fucking everything in its state. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just like, nah, we have like 99% of you just good to go. And let's put the 1% that's special about you. Like,
yeah, it's hard for me to argue too much against it because of shit like Thomas Riker. Like transporters can do weird things.
They do weird shit. Now, like I said, I don't know that Thomas Riker is like the best plot that Star Trek has ever come up with.
Yeah,
like,
I could concede that, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah, like I said, the last 5 minutes of this thing are just pure bliss for any kind of Star Trek fan. God, the music, like even the a proper. Mm-hmm. I thought for a minute that they were going to dark light the ED.
Me too. I was going to get up and I was going to write a furious letter.
Yes, I'm like, you cannot fucking turn on the lights, and they did, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that's a proper bridge, man. That is a proper Star Trek starship bridge.
Yeah,
got the that nice soft warm lighting.
Mm-hmm.
None of this harsh, like, who wants to look at the Titan's bridge? Nobody.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like a cheap foreign sports car interior. Just carbon fiber and brushed metal and steel, and nothing's bright enough. You can't see your dials and gauges.
Right. Or when you do look at them, they blind you because there's no ambient lighting. Yeah.
dash rattles. There's a lot of road noise. It's just, yeah, they're really, really sacrificing a lot to for a cheap look.
So I don't know. I love that part. I liked most of this episode, but yeah, you're right. Boy, do they retcon Irrimadi syndrome entirely. And I don't know how that sits with me.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk through it when we get there. Anyway, why don't we get into the recap?
Yes. Red alert. Here comes an ad break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy. And strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
We start off with Deanna in Jack's mind, where we left them last episode. Jack doesn't know what anything in his visions mean until Deanna talks him through it. And then Jack agrees to let Deanna open the door in his mind. She does, and she is very scared by what she sees. And she runs out of the room to tell Picard and Beverly about it. And then we get to see what she saw, which was a big old Borg cube in a nebula or something. I don't know. It was very intense.
Yeah. I was trying to think of how I would feel if I was in a therapeutic situation with my counselor and she was doing some kind of, I don't know, deep hypnosis therapy or perfusion thing. And I come to consciousness and I look at her and she's just got this look of abject horror with her hand on her mouth and says, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I've got," and she just runs from the session screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, that's, you know, Deanna, there's some bedside manner here that could be practiced.
Yeah, I would have been super worried about this particular plot point if it weren't for the fact that there is literally nothing else going on and they can't do anything until they figure out what's in Jack's head. Because this is one of those things that they easily could have just like spent an entire episode cutting back and forth.
I was kind of worried. I was kind of worried when they cut away from her seeing what it is and did this. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
But so. I'm like, what else is going on? There's literally nothing else going on.
Right.
You have to address this now.
Yeah.
And luckily they did. So I think that helped the episode quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
it was interesting how like... Now that we know what they're supposed to be, this stuff is like they had this thing of Jack explaining like what these vines meant to him and how he felt about him as a child and whether he got comfort. And he's like, no, not comfort. It just felt right, true, perfect. And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, this is I feel like I kind of had the like, God, is it, are they going for the Borg?
It's got that Borg feel.
How are they going to fit the Borg in here? Isn't the Queen Jurati?
Just going to slam them in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just bam. Season 3, episode 9, one to go. Boom, here's the Borg. The existential threat to the Federation. Solve it with one repair shuttlecraft, you know?
Yeah, I mean, let's get into the next scene where Picard's, like, protesting that he could have passed any Borg stuff onto his son through his DNA.
Right.
This Borg curse he's got. Beverly believes it's possible. Picard moves to go tell Jack bad news, and Deanna stops him and says, look, this kid is now considered very dangerous. I think this is perfect in some ways. Like, I don't know how I feel about waiting this long to tell us and having no time left to really delve into this too deeply, but this is kind of the perfect end in a certain way to Picard's arc. Like, the thing that has been haunting him his entire life since becoming Locutus is the Borg that stayed with him, and we get the idea now that there is something physical that stayed with him, not just mental. And
I
like that idea, but I think it's like weirdly rushed in a season that was dealing with other things so much. But it kind of comes full circle. I mean, the stuff early on with Jack was like, oh my God, he's my son. I've passed on, you know, my lack of attentiveness as a father, my inability to connect with people to him. And that was his biggest worry. And now there's an even bigger worry, right? That he's passed something even much worse to him. I kind of like it.
Yeah, and it does. It's not built on nothing, because I even remember when we were talking about First Contact. We've got that movie review in our archive. If you want to go search Bald Move, First Contact, boom, first result. Where we talk about, like, you know, when the Captain Picard can hear the Borg, like a skittering in the back of his mind, like, we're like, what the fuck is that? Like, he doesn't have a Borg. Like, did Beverly forget to get one of the wireless transceivers out of his brain? Or is this? And I think we settled on the idea that, like, Picard just knows the Borg intimately, and he knows what they're going to do based on the, and that's being represented to us by like the Borg are like skittering in the back of his mind. He's hearing the echoes of them and intuiting what they're wanting to do. But it turns out that the way they explain this is every time they take a drone, they do some genetic modification to make the drone interface with the technology, the Borg implants, better. And that since Locutus was a special project, that he had like a super form of this, you know, where his like body is like in like it's so receptive to the Borg implants that it can receive signals without, you know, like he's developed organic structures that can receive these signals. Now, my question to you is, this a long running Borg plan? Or was this an emergent property that the Borg have just become aware of because of the Dominion's bullshit? And they're going to capitalize on it. Because it kind of breaks my mind to think that the Borg deliberately engineered Locutus and let him go so that he would spawn a child that would then be in a position to be recalled into a massive antenna that could take over every Starfleet personnel under the age of 25. I feel like the Borg just got wind of this happening and saw an opportunity that they're exploiting. Do you see it different?
No, I think you're right. It's got to be, right? I don't know. It's all a big retcon, so it's like, am I going to go back through what I know of Picard's history and try and pick out the pieces that say, hey, the Borg might have been doing this intentionally?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do that. I don't think it's there to be done, because this is a big retcon.
Do you think the Dominion, the offshoot of the Founders that are trying to destroy the Federation, do you think they're deliberately working? Do you think they're deliberately invoking the Borg? or did they saw some other way that they could use Jack's power for their own purpose?
No, I think they're sicking the Borg on the Federation. Effectively. I mean, that's okay. It seems to me what it
so
is.
So it's a deliberate process.
They use their powers to get in to change the transporter code on all these ships.
I do wonder what would have Amanda Plummer done? What would have Vedic done if she had lived? Because it's like, I felt like now that she's dead and that thing is over, that the Borg are taking over as a new threat. But also, yeah. When were the Borg? Because like, I guess it seems like the story is also that Jack has been receiving Borg transmissions ever since he was a child. And I wonder, like, when did the Borg realize they had this piece on the board? Like, right. When Beverly and Picard had, you know, relations and he was conceived, and like did this little biological ping appear on their network?
Yeah, I suppose it might have. Because we see that they can communicate at least somewhat with him, right?
Yeah, I wonder why they need, it's like he has to be plugged in that big green amplifier to take over the entire Alpha Quadrant worth of Starfleet or something. Because like it
could be, yeah.
The other thing that's kind of dangling is like, why do they need his physical presence? Why can't they just jack him, turn him into a drone?
Yeah, from afar.
Yeah.
I don't know. All this, the science-y part of this is a big question mark.
I was also trying to find out if there's like, is this the death knell of my left nut theory? My left nut, right ovary theory, because like,
I think so.
I'm trying to like, is the red eyes, is this there's some Dominion special sauce that's going to allow Jack to do, because they're both collectives, right? They're just different ways of collecting and different ways to assume individuals into a collective. And I wonder if there's going to be some synergy that the Borg Queen's not going to anticipate.
Could be like if he connects to the Borg network and then he's also a changeling, which is looking less likely, but if he's also a changeling,
yeah,
then he could also connect to the Founder network and maybe they could take over the Borg.
We want to reject both our biology and our technology and just be goo. We want to join the goo lifestyle.
The lifestyle I've been trying to live most of my life.
I just
want to
live in a platinum bucket.
Yes.
In a gelatinous state, pour me into an ocean of my fellow kind, and I'm good to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out like what the what the fuck is going, because like also this also goes in with the stupid idea of remotely taking over every Starfleet ship in the galaxy for a singular purpose. Like, why did anyone ever think this was a good idea?
Well, how else would they honor the late great, he's not dead, the late great Ron Moore of Star Trek fame without doing the Battlestar Galactica gambit?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to have those analog starships. Only the analog starships.
Those ancient, busted piece of garbage.
Yeah, they're using wax cylinders, Edison cylinders in their memory cores. They're analog, see, not digital. Uh-huh. No ones and zeros anywhere to be seen in the Enterprise D.
The only thing automated on them is the doors.
It's... And if you've ever seen an outtake reel, you know they're unreliable.
selectively automated.
The amount of times I've seen Michael Dorn slam into one going full speed is pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know how they fix the galaxy now. Like you said, it's gonna have to involve Jack.
It's gotta be Jack. Yeah, he's got to take over the Borg collective. I wonder if they're gonna do. I want to say irreparably change, but that has a negative context. I wonder if they're going to irrevocably change the Borg, if Jack is now going to be like the Borg King or something, and the Borg are going to be benevolent because Jack is Picard's son.
Would that be delicious? Would that be ridiculous? I've been saying it since 1989. The whole problem, the Borg matriarchal society. They switch that out they get a man in charge and shit's going to be different, Jim. I tell you, I think you're on something.
Sure.
Bravo.
Even if he's under 25, because Star Trek's got an opinion on that now.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's the olds. We have to trust the olds. The olds are telling us that they're the ones to be trusted. So what are we going to do? You know, and I'm one of the olds. I'm co-opted. All you young, able, brain sharp people with functioning bodies, get the fuck out of our way. It's time for the olds. It's time for the olds. We've done a bang up job.
God.
And we're
people
just going to continue.
Have not seen this episode and are just listening to the pod are going to be so confused by this rant.
Good.
We'll get there.
That's what they're looking for. It's what they're looking for in a ball move experience, clearly.
Apparently. I don't know. I felt real bad for Picard in these scenes. Maybe we can go over to where he's talking with Jack.
Yeah.
He goes to Jack, who demands to know what Deanna saw in his head. Picard explains it to him, including all his history with the Borg and his Irrmadic syndrome. He also explains that Jack is considered dangerous now and tells him they're taking him to a research facility on Vulcan. Jack doesn't want to go. The guards at the door have other thoughts, so Jack takes over their minds and leaves the Titan with the intent to kill the Borg Queen.
Yes. So this is the point, like, we're going to... Have we talked about it? How we feel about Irrmadic syndrome being retconned?
I'm not the world's biggest fan. I like the transporter idea and using that to alter people to assimilate the fleet. I don't necessarily like the retconning of the Irrmadic syndrome, because that to me was a defining feature of Picard. The saving grace is they've used another defining feature of Picard to retcon it, which is his complicated relationship with the Borg. I think if it were anything else that was less essential to his character that they were doing this with, I would be almost angry as you can be about a fictional TV universe. But because they're doing this particular thing, I think it's mostly okay.
You're right. It's like if there's anything that's more central to Picard's core, the thing that they've hung the most drama on, it's definitely, you know, it goes all the way back to... the Locutus thing, the best of both worlds, goes all the way back to the family episode. It's kind of the theme that's run through most of the Picard.
For sure.
The series, too. So, like, yeah, I guess you're right. If they're going to be fucking with some a foundational thing, it's to fuse the two foundations together.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't hate it. It's just really shaky. It just like it feels like the middle tier Star Trek where they're just really coasting on what is affectionally referred to as Trekno babble, where it's like we've got this idea. We're in kind of like a hard science flavor show. There's no real way to do it. So we'll just cover it up with enough tachyons and transwarp tunnels and positronic bridging and Bassard ram scoops, and the fans will just be like, that sounds like science, and they'll go with it.
Yeah, here's the thing. If Star Trek Picard had been better overall, I would give them a lot more latitude. I would be more accepting of this change, I think. I just don't trust that this is a good, I guess, a place to leave Picard forever. Because I haven't trusted them for two seasons now. So I've got like some residual misgivings about anything they do, because I think it's going to be cheesy and kind of dumb, but I don't think this applies here necessarily.
Yeah. There's also something that the Red Letter Media guy's been talking about, cause they're covering the season too. And they talk about how for some behind the scene reasons, Alec Kurtzman kind of took a back step from this season of Picard, and also was not attached to Strange New World. So it's like, even though they're like the executive producers, like these are like kind of showrunners on their own. That might explain why this season's felt a lot more cohesive as a whole, but I don't know.
I mean, the addition of basically every TNG cast member, it goes a long way to
Yeah, because just explaining them getting together in a satisfying, like, if you can do that,
yeah,
then you got half the battle, right?
Yeah, all that other emotional joy comes with it. So I don't know. I think I need a little bit of time to process this because it's a big change, but also I could see myself actually really liking this at some point.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Beverly vows to do something to get Jack back. Data says they couldn't track his shuttle and tries to comfort Picard. Then Geordi tells Picard, we got bigger problems. There's some more shit you need to know about Jack.
Yeah, there's a nice scene here of Data offering words of comfort and Picard being like, there really isn't anything you can say, and Data accepting the truth of that and just, you know, putting his hand on Picard's shoulder, offering some solidarity there. I thought that was that was cute.
I feel like I've seen Picard do that with people from time to time, because
he's not a hugger.
Not great with those comforting words either.
He's more of a shoulder clapper. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we go over to Jack, who arrives somewhere. I don't know where he's going. Anyway, he enters a transwarp conduit, or he's sitting outside a transwarp conduit. I can't tell if the Borg ship comes through the transwarp conduit to him, or if he goes through
it to
them.
Hiding in a nebula the whole time. It doesn't really, yeah, it's kind of half a one, six dozen the other.
Fair, yeah, it doesn't really matter.
The thing is, transwarp conduits are a Borg thing. They're that's how they move extraordinarily fast through space. They're kind of like their little superhighways that they build, kind of like permanent tunnels. You know, like warp is transitory tunnels.
Yeah, if you've seen Voyager, like, you know all about transwarp.
Yeah, his shuttle detecting that is just letting you know that, oh, yeah, it's the Borg, and boom, then you see the cube. It's not even a cube. It's like an installation.
Is it?
Did you get that?
I couldn't.
It's
really
definitely
tell.
A cube component, but it felt like there was little bits coming off of it at odd angles that made it look more of like a city too.
Maybe they only ever like show you wings. Like a corner of it sticking out of a nebula cloud or whatever it is.
I wonder if it's because they're hinting that it's much, much larger. It's going to be some insanely big thing. Which what the Federation fleet's going to combine together like the world's greatest Megazord.
Wolf
can
3,
Enterprise
6,
D be the head?
Sure.
Can it be the eyeball? It's way too small. Yeah. Oh, true. Well, that's why it'd be the head. It'd be the last thing to network together. So
it could be the sword that the network wields.
With a detachable blade in the form of the saucer section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Riker can crash it on the Genesis planet or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Geordi and Data explain that the changelings took the part of Picard's body that was a Borg receiver, and apparently Jack has a genetic Borg transmitter built into him. They don't know how he could control unassimilated people, though. Big mystery. And they realize that the changelings are working with the Borg to destroy the fleet during Frontier Day, and Picard tells Shaw, take us to Earth.
They don't ever really explain how he controls unassimilated people. Oh no, they do because the organic
Borg bits,
modules they've been overriding in their code. Okay.
Yeah, the transporter stuff.
But this explains why they had interest in Picard's body. They wanted this organic tech. But why? That's what I'm saying. Like,
surely the Borg could reproduce this, right?
Yeah, and it makes me think that there's something else with the founders that they're setting up. Or a founder Borg alliance that it might be uneasy. There might not be a full sharing going on. Or again, that they were wanting to use this Federation technology for their own purpose. Federation Borg technology. Because they're using the evolved strain of founders and this evolved strain of Borg technology for some purpose that we still don't quite understand. It seems like and I think that it's been hijacked by the Borg, but that, like you said, that might have been the intention of the founders all along.
Yeah, to use Borg as their mecha sword, whatever you would call it, their Power Rangers sword.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the thing, but
the Borg are in a different quadrant from the founders, right?
And they're out in the Delta Quadrant, right?
Oh, are they? I thought they were in, like, Gamma. So the wormhole goes to the Delta Quadrant?
I could be wrong about that. I don't know. Where did Voyager go? Did they go to the Gamma Quadrant? Was that the thing?
I thought they went to the Delta Quadrant.
Okay, that's why I thought the Borg were in the Delta
Quadrant.
Because
they made that shuttlecraft. It was Voyager. Like scouting, and they called it the Delta Flyer. I thought it was because of the quadrant they're in.
I think you're right, which makes me assume that the Borg are mostly in the Delta Quadrant, but I could
be wrong.
Because
I was like, maybe they're in a different quadrant, and that's why the Dominion's like, fuck them, you know? Like, we'll have centuries to prepare for the Borg when they...
Really? With their transwarp stuff?
I might be wrong, because again, I was very spotty Voyager fan, but I thought the idea of a transwarp conduit was like, it's like an infrastructure you have to
pre-built
maintain and build. So like the first time you go to some place, you can't use a conduit because they don't exist.
Right. And the only reason they were able to get here in the first place is because Q brought them.
So they went at maximum warp speed that still took them years to get to the Terran system. And
I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. So if they went to a whole new quadrant, it would be. Yeah, I don't know. Fuck it.
They're here, right? They're within range of Jack. So they're definitely here. They can transwarp in or transwarp him to them, whatever they're doing here. There's a connection there.
True. So, they're close enough that Jack is able to get to them on a goddamn space shuttle.
Right. In like a couple hours.
Shuttlecraft. So, yeah.
They're here. I don't know what they're going to do other than take over Earth. But yeah, I don't know if there's a bigger plan. To me, it was like, well, we need the changelings to get in place to get the transporter code changed so that we can assimilate all these people so that the Borg can destroy Earth. And beyond that,
it's an interesting idea if the Borg have been manipulating the Founders. Like the Borg found out that, oh, we have this detached drone that's the son of Locutus. And, you know, we're still stuck in the Delta Quadrant regrouping our losses, and they see this opportunity to manipulate all of their enemies to their end. Like I said, I wish there was more time. I wish it was like,
yeah,
they literally sell the idea by Beverly being like, you know, birds know the turn at the same time, and bees collect honey without anyone telling them. There's organic collectives and it's like the boom. That's all the justification we're going to get.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it was a mistake. Maybe the biggest mistake of the season so far has been to hold back any kind of Jack reveal for this late in the season. I think if it was, and it's proving to be like a huge reveal, I think it would have been better to more explore the reveal as opposed to keep this mystery to shock us at the very end.
The problem, though, is I can't imagine how they would do that without people figuring out it's the Borg almost immediately.
Well, then tell us.
He starts talking about this connection shit and perfection of connection and you know, like what, like the red vines already were.
I mean, Star Trek First Contact starts with the Borg going back in time and trying to assimilate Earth. Yeah. I feel like it didn't harm that movie to know that it was the Borg the whole time and just be fighting the Borg. I could really go for another one of those.
It wasn't ostensibly a Dominion War movie that was secretly a Borg War movie.
Yeah, so I don't know that this is
working.
Which
makes you think, it's like, why not just, like, because I think everyone agrees, even the red letter media guys who are like the most cynical Star Trek fans I know that are still not just complete idiots. everyone agreed that like through 8 episodes this is like the best season, right?
Sure.
I'm talking about like the people who are just like blah blah Star Trek's too woke and all, that's like that shit I don't even care to talk about it. Like, why not just keep doing what you're doing? Why not just have Picard foil the Dominion threat? That's like, you know,
sure,
like why but it's like they need an exclamation point for the end of Picard.
Yeah, and this is almost too big of an exclamation point to not explain it thoroughly.
It's like 3 exclamation points, and it's hard to believe it's going to fit in, you know, an hour and a half of television.
Yeah, that's the thing. I want to say they think that they've already fitted into 45 minutes. Right? I mean, if this is all the explanation they're going to give us, and then it's going to be the climax and resolution next week.
Yeah.
Then they've done their jobs, hands washed of the whole thing, right? Like,
and the thing is like, I think that they won't, unless they deal with the Jurati question, unless the Agnes Queen shows up, I'm kind of going to be a little disappointed. Because that's a piece on the table. Yeah. For Christ's sake, it just happened last season. It was the big, bad, you know, amazing, jaw-dropping thing that happened at the end of last season.
Maybe they can use the kinder, gentler Borg to fight the harsher, less gentle Borg. I don't know.
It would be interesting if, like, going forward, the Star Trek Prime Universe, like, had made peace with all of their traditional foes. Like, they're broadly at peace with the Dominion, the Romulans, the Klingons, even the Borg. But there's factions that miss the good old days when they were running shit. And, like, you know, you have this kind of, like, axis power of Dominion, Borg, xenophobic Romulan, you know, whatever, essentially. The dregs of the Dominion War coming back to menace the entire galaxy. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it. Is this it from a certain point of view? I know I'm mixing my sci-fi franchises. Could this be seen as the revenge of Sisko? He blamed Picard for getting his wife killed. The final revenge of Sisko is to sick the Borg on all of Earth. Via the Dominion War.
He's just chilling with the prophets in the wormhole, be like, I can't wait to see you get out of this bullshit, Picard.
And he knows, right? He's out of time right now. He knows what's going to happen. He's just licking his chops, waiting for it.
Tossing his baseball back and forth, laughing. Yeah.
Just reliving this moment every single day of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's just sitting in this moment, looking at it, going, here's where Picard died. Here's where Earth was destroyed because of dumbass Picard.
At least my son Jake didn't get Borg shit installed on him, Picard. He just turned into a journalist. It was almost as bad, but still.
Right. And a Ferengi friend.
Oh, shit. A friend of the Ferengi? Oof, oof.
We'll see. We'll see what they do within the final episode. But we still got a lot more of this episode to talk about. Admiral Shelby departs the starbase around Earth for Enterprise's ceremonial Frontier Day run. As she debuts the fleet's newest feature, Wi-Fi. It's 2348 or whatever the fuck it is. Finally, they have Wi-Fi, Aaron.
Yeah, there's a lot of... First of all, the Enterprise F comes out of Stardock with with an audible fart. Like,
yep, it's clone. It's literally like a Voyager clone, right?
Yeah, like, it looks like the Voyager and the Sovereign class had a baby, and sure, everyone's going to say it's ugly because it is. It's a bad ship.
Especially when you juxtapose it with the beauty that is the Enterprise D later in this episode.
Yes. Yes. I've resisted looking up because you've hinted that there has been this Enterprise F kind of like in circulation. It was part of a video game or something, or maybe it was in Lower Decks, some of the shit that I haven't seen.
I want to say it was in the video game, the Star Trek Online, I think. Mm-hmm. But it was also, I found out this week, apparently in this show too, earlier. It was in the files that Ro goes through, her like treasure trove of data. There was like a screenshot of it.
Oh, okay. Well,
not like it's featured in an episode. Right.
Yeah, like I always hated Commander Shelby, you know, because her job was to come onto the Enterprise, be super like dedicated to fighting the Borg and putting Riker's nuts in a vice grip. That was her job as the plot. And it, as a 12-year-old kid watching, you did your job right. I hated this fucking woman.
And she did it to Sisko, too, in Deep Space Nine.
Oh, she, really?
A couple of
Shelby
times,
Shelby comes back and puts his nuts in a twist, too?
Yeah,
oh, my
not too
God.
Watched it.
Incredible, the career of this woman.
Yeah.
She should have come for Janeway's and got the trifecta. But
she was a little too far away.
True. She'd find a way. She'd find a way. She hears those balls to break. She's not going to let a quadrant stand in the way of her duty there.
Yeah.
I did say it was fun to see from, like, there's something fun and nostalgic. And also, it's like they said, the deep irony of this, like, Borg Cold Warrior espousing essentially Borg doctrine and thought, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the analog is pretty clear, right? They're networking the fleet. They're making the one just like the Borg collective.
I'm not sure why it's useful to do that. Like, it always felt like the individual initiative of the starships were, like, mini cases, like, turn the tide of the battle. And, like, what just, yeah, yeah, like, what is the use of just putting them in, like, a big wall and moving them around, you know?
This is the continued de-federationing of the Federation, right? Like, they're just abandoning all the principles that they've lived by before. And one of those principles was, like, our differences make us stronger. Now we're turning into the Borg Collective. And I don't think that's something that just, like, started happening once the changeling started infiltrating, right? I think it's something that's been going on for a long time, but I don't know. I don't particularly like it. I also don't think there are enough fireworks in the Sol system to make the ship look cool, and I don't think fireworks work in space is the problem.
I have in my notes, how do we feel about fireworks? Yeah, fireworks.
This
fireworks
felt desperate
in space
to me. This felt like, God, we know we're going to unveil the Enterprise D later, and that's going to be the biggest moment that Star Trek fans have had in a long time. Next Generation,
so make
fans,
it like
certainly
a WrestleMania debut.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And how can we do that? I don't know. Fireworks? That's a thing. It's a celebration, sure. But I don't think fireworks can combust in space this way.
I'm sure there's some kind of plasma. There's some
without
kind of plasma
oxygen, right?
Bullshit, but yeah.
Okay, sure. If it's like, sure, if this is Trekno-tech, right?
I mean, like I said, I'm just rolling with the WrestleMania, that they're just like, and its registration number is NCC-1701F, and there's like shit exploding and fire, and it's like, yeah, nah, it's God, it's, it, you know, I think it's an intentional homage to like the love, like, because we, classic Trek fans really hated the Excelsior class because Scotty hated it, so we hated it. It was the Next Generation, it's pushing out Kirk, we didn't like it. And they had a lot of like these love, like they'd do these things like where they'd have this lovingly space porn shot of the Excelsior, but then the joke was that it was always about to break down. Like it's going to run down Kirk's crew, but Scotty sabotaged it, so it fires up its transwarp drives and clunk, clunk, throws a space rod and it's dead in the water. It's a joke. Is there a little bit of this that, like, this is such an obviously shit design, that it's a little bit of like the space porn shots of the Excelsior just so it looks shit, like shit, when you finally see the Enterprise D?
Maybe. I don't know.
This is a dumb ship design, man. It's bulbous in all the wrong areas. Its saucer's too small. Its nacelles are too long. It looks
like
a newborn
Voyager
baby colt with a head deformity.
I'm with you. I don't like the design of this ship very much. It doesn't look like Enterprise to me, but I don't know if I have a good finger on the pulse of modern Trek fans, because modern Trek fans, and a lot of them like disco, and I don't like disco. So I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. It's got a fitting number designation F because it's a complete failure in all level. Let's hope for a top G when we get to the next one.
Do you think it's ironic that they're holding Frontier Day in the heart of the Empire, the Federation?
Dude, I've always had questions about, like, why is Earth so goddamn important to the Federation? Like, if you lose the conceit that this is a human television show, it never makes sense. Like, why are the Vulcans just like, they built this thing and then these impetuous apes come up from the planet Earth?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, fuck it, here's the keys, you get to start Starfleet, all of our important, like, we're gonna move our base of operations to your fucking backwards planet, we're going
the
to,
Federation
yeah.
was a Vulcan book club is the thing. It was just
Earth
a weekly meeting
to a Starfleet
of like six old Vulcan dudes who talked about their favorite Vulcan literature, Vulcan poetry.
Yeah, 1/7 at any time are besotted by Ponfire, so they're just worthless. And the humans had to impose order on the Vulcans to get anything done. I don't know. Like, it seems really weird that, like, it makes sense in the fictional sense of Star Trek that, you know, this series is a lot of just, like, waving about how awesome Star Trek is. Like, it's got all the old ships. It's a word name checking NX-01, the unloved Enterprise. and it's Maiden Voyage, and there's all this fake history, but it just doesn't, it doesn't really make sense in a real world. But that's been a, that's been something that's been in Star Trek forever. I've never understood why fucking Hollywood, essentially. It's not even, it's not even the Earth. It's like California. Southern California rules the Alpha Quadrant. How did that shit happen?
I mean, it's kind of going that way, isn't it? It's like San Francisco is going to be running shit anyway.
I guess. Yeah, I guess. They're just projecting current trends into the future.
They got it right. They got that part right. I don't know. I think it's just a slap in the face to the the actual frontier, to hold your Frontier Day celebration in the most centralized Federation location possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what do I know? I'm not a frontiersman.
Do you think tech bros in the 25th century get sick and tired of regulations and shit on Earth, and they move?
Yeah, why do you think the Federation's breaking down?
They move to a Klingon home planet, and the Klingons are like salty about it. Don't you fucking bring your Federation politics here.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you fucking bring your high taxes and your fucking turtle safe straws out to Austin Klingon, or to San Antonio Klingon. You can't do that.
Probably.
It's like they're like, you know, it's like, oh, we hate the Federation. They're too much taxes. They're up in our business. But, you know, I don't like the fact that anyone can just challenge me to a duel. Like, we need to tweak the Klingon culture a little bit to get it to there. Don't fucking do that.
Yeah. It's hard to become an oligarch, a galactic oligarch, when anyone can challenge you to a duel for any reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. It's disruptive. Disruptive to one's business plan.
Your schedule. I mean, what if you're on the other side of the quadrant and you get challenged to a duel?
Ugh.
It's like a week out of your schedule. Anyway, Jack explores the Borg ship while the Queen talks to him, tells him his name is Vox, the voice of the Borg. He finds the Borg Queen, but he can't kill her. He something inside of him won't let him. And so she connects him to the collective.
It's some, like I said, there's something in here about some kind of the vindication of both our species. Again, it's really centralizing humans as a premise, as supreme here. And I don't know. They shoot him full of Borg probes, which I don't understand why they had to do, because he was already a Borg drone. So they double droned him.
Yeah, I mean, they hardwired him, you know, he's on the Wi-Fi, but it's like,
the
connection's spotty, you know, sometimes he gets out of range.
Right.
But,
and Picard and Data used a Wi-Fi exploit to put them all asleep that one time. So they really insist on hardwiring the Queen.
Yeah.
Not gonna put him to sleep twice. What did they do, though? What, in the next episode, Jack just puts him asleep?
Oh, God. I mean, it, like I said, it's the only real possible outcome is Jack intervenes here, but
There's two low-level subroutines that could take advantage of: sleeping and shitting.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the Borg have spent the last 35 years just armoring the shit out of sleeper subroutines, and because of the way they are, they just didn't even see the other possibility. They're going to be incapacitated. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
By irritable Borg syndrome. IBS.
Right, let's go over to Geordi and Data. Shields up. Here come the ads.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com.
At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to the podcast maneuver. They've discovered that the transporter systems, all of them everywhere, I don't know, have been modified with the Borg DNA, meaning everyone who's transported is technically assimilated. Unless, as we'll find out next episode, or next scene, you're under the age of 25. Or you're over the age of 25, sorry.
Right, yeah. Your brain's got to be old! Your brain's got to be old to survive this process.
Here's where I started thinking, have any of them been transported in this series? Because I think so.
Well, this makes
Geordi comes over on a transporter, but then it
makes
sense.
Ensign Rolaren like insisted on not taking a transporter. That should have been a clue that there was something, but I assumed it was a Founders thing that she was, that they were making her seem suspicious
together sooner then.
Well, that's my
data for a while, I guess.
How the fuck, like, I'm trying to think of how insane this is, that you've essentially snuck this major revision to a critical piece of infrastructure in every Federation starship in the last year or so. But it seems like it went hand in glove with a covert takeover of the highest levels of Starfleet.
Yeah, so anybody like, who questions it is just going to be,
if there are a whole bunch of chief engineers rejected, raising reports and it's just going to an admiral who's suppressing them or giving some bullshit.
Or the chief engineers themselves are changelings
if they're that fucking impacted. I don't know. Like I said, a lot of this did not make sense to me, and I thought it was pretty ass pulley, but they also had enough plausible deniability that, you know, if you wanna, I think that if you wanna throw a fit about this, you're gonna be seen as a nitpicker.
And I think the idea is super cool.
I
do think like this covert assimilation is a really neat idea, and kind of a necessary evolution for the Borg, because I don't want to see just another season of the Borg running up and injecting people's necks. That was cool for the first 20 years that they did it, but I don't know if they need to continue doing it.
Yeah.
This is a cool way to update them to make it more interesting. I thought it was an awesome idea, regardless of how they got here.
Okay.
Suddenly the Titan starts to go into fleet formation mode with the other ships there. Before they lose full control, Picard gets half an emergency message out to the fleet and to Admiral Shelby, warning them about the Borg/Changeling threat. Then their comms are cut off, and the Borg fire up a signal, which will affect everyone under the age of 25. One of those people is on the bridge of the Titan, as are Geordi's daughters. They both get assimilated, and Shelby gets shot death as the entire fleet is assimilated by youths, Aaron. Can we do something about the youths?
Got to put them down before they kill us all. They're wild, impetuous. They got their ideas of how they want to run things. It's a threat to our position.
Look, here's where I start to have objections. This 25-year-old rule is complete bullshit. You're telling me you've got a system here that can spawn off entire evil copies of people by transporting them, but it can't modify the frontal cortex of a fully grown adult? I don't understand.
Have stopped developing at age 25, and that's when they can't just brute force beam a part of it into your DNA no more.
Apparently.
You're too old. You're too
old.
This
is the thing that I objected to. This is stupid.
That's the thing. It's not, Beverly thinks it's some biological component. It's just Borg think like cell phone manufacturers. They're not going to support security updates for devices that are older than so many years. It's just it's too much bullshit. There's too much bullshit. They want the young, the malleable, and they're just stamping out anything. And it's probably not a total
cutoff.
They're
like TV
executives,
you know? If they can get the youths, then eventually those people will become fans for life. And if you can get the fans of Borg for life.
And I take it it's not a strict cutoff. It's not like if your Federation ID says that you are 26 years old in one day, that it's like probably a continuum. There's probably some 28-year-olds that are getting
especially
infected.
Especially underdeveloped frontal cortex.
Yeah. Probably some 21-year-olds that are mentally... I don't know. But like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, we have a very old cast... And we want for them to plausibly take over the Federation and ride to the rescue. How can we do that? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We need old brains to be resistant to the Borg.
Yeah. And it goes hand in hand with, you know, the old technology that they're going to resuscitate from the museum here.
It's so weird because I from all accounts, the core audience of these shows are extremely young. But this is boomer porn of the highest caliber.
It is it, absolutely
like there's
going to
be a threat, right? like you don't think my dad doesn't live for the day that the cell phones are going to take over and all the young people who don't know how to like, I don't know what's the thing. They don't know how to write in cursive or send lick a stamp to post that the post mail are going to be like, old people save us. And they're going to run out in their carbureted vehicles with no fuel injection and they're going to like save the day.
Yeah, when inevitably Elon Musk turns on fleet formation mode on all the Teslas, yeah.
All of their kids that refuse to leave their grandkids alone with them because of God knows what they'll say, or they're going to be, help us, Dad, and they're going to ride to the rescue.
Only way this could be more offensive to people under 25 is if they were to, like, say... The reason that it didn't affect them is because they're listening to jazz and classical music. And if they were listening to electronic music of any stripe, they would be
K-pop,
affected.
You would be. Uh-huh. But there is this kind of like the young people are easy to influence and brainwash and to Pied Piper that I don't know that
from lack of experience.
Yeah. If I was when I was a 16-year-old, I didn't like hearing that shit, but I'm a 24-year-old and someone's trying to be like, your brain's not fully done cooking and I'm like, fuck you, old man.
Totally.
I don't know. I can say, cause like, it's my impression that this is a very young, mostly progressive fan base. And, but also they worship Picard and Riker and all that. So maybe they'll serve, but it's wild to,
I think they should have gone the other
your
way.
Core demographic as the potential big bads of the season.
I mean, look, this is fan service to an aging generation of Star Trek fans. I mean,
sure.
God damn, the show is called Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
You know, half the people watching Star Trek, the people under 25 watching Star Trek may or may not know who Picard is. In his Next Generation context. So I think they should have gone the other way. I think it should have been, this could only affect people over 25 because
I agree
their brains are rigid and they can create new structures within them. Whereas the young ones will have their brain rejected because it's still
their brain forming. Can reformat it. Yeah. And resist.
Right.
I totally agree. That would have been, and you have the new generation, you got Crash and her sister and Jack
having to save their parents because they're fucking boomers and they're destroying the Federation. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's the way on this. But this is Star Trek Picard, like I said. So the nostalgia here is for the olds. We are the olds. They can't really say the olds suck and all the youth have to come save them.
Not on a Paramount network.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. I think it would have been more satisfying and I think arguably cooler to have the younger generation save the old, especially since the old generation has been kicking ass this whole season. And it'd also be a nice kind of like, isn't it supposed to be kind of a handoff? But I'm hearing that they're wanting to do the Star Trek Legacy where they just want to figure out a way to keep the bridge crew, maybe minus Patrick Stewart, together forever and keep making Star Trek. So, but like,
okay,
this was a golden opportunity to hand off to the next generation. And
yeah, the Sydneys, the Alondra. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Shaws, they fuck. Cool. We haven't even gotten to the worst part of the episode, in my opinion.
Well, let's talk real quickly about Sydney, about Geordi's daughters, because they're assimilated in this scene. I felt real bad for Geordi. You know, he's kind of given up a lot to try and raise them the way he thinks they should be raised. To do right by them. And here they are being assimilated, and you get to see it through Geordi's POV here. I like how scared he is and how horrified by it.
Yeah, he's going to heedlessly go and find them. That's his instinct, and Data has to save him from himself. Yeah. Like,
and how powerless he is to stop it in this moment. It's crushing. I felt so bad for him.
The kids, they're being influenced by wild and crazy ideas. I can feel them drifting from us. What do I do?
Should have had him listen to more jazz, Geordi.
Should have, yeah.
All right. Picard, Riker, Seven, Shaw, they all decide they need to get off Titan. The Excelsior has managed to retake their ship, but their ship is just immediately taken over by the Borg and destroyed. Didn't last long.
The fucking Excelsior. That's just, they just shit on this ship. I love it.
Yep. Shaw realizes that they're communicating on a maintenance channel and decides we need to go to the maintenance deck to get a shuttle off the ship.
Apparently, there's a hidden shuttle bay in all starships that are in the sub basement. They just have some repair shuttles because
I guess if you're in the lower decks and you can't get to like the I would think it'd be smart to pepper a starship with shuttles or at least like evacuation pods. Because you can't always get to the central location, right? The turbo lift goes down.
If this was an evacuation pod or like a maintenance tug that like had like, you know, like this QB boxy thing was like bristling with like manipulator arms and stuff. But it's just a Federation start. It's just shuttlecraft. Mm-hmm. Like I was expecting to see something that I don't know. It's like whatever. They needed a way to get the olds off the ship. They had to beat a fighting retreat from the onslaught of the youngs and... there's this roaming Borg crew of young people coming around, and the fucking Titan's been decimated. Like first it was the founders running around killing everybody. Now it's the young Borg running around killing everybody. Mm-hmm. It's been a bad day for the USS Titan.
Picard's team meets up with Data's team, and they reiterate the need to get off the ship on a shuttle. Geordi has an idea. They have to fight off some youths, and Shaw gets killed in the process. He uses his dying breath to give command of the ship over to her, at least symbolically, given that it's completely under Borg control for the foreseeable future. And as Picard's team leaves the ship, the fleet moves to destroy the planetary defenses of Earth.
It calls her Seven of Nine, which is an interesting season arc for him. You'd think he'd be like, I fucking knew it, you know, about the Borg coming back instead of being like all amicable, but whatever. Huge mistake to kill Shaw. I think he's the breakout star of this season and could have easily headlined another Star Trek series because he's kind of like a captain we haven't seen. It's not that he's incompetent, he's not brave, he's a little bit more by the book, but like it's a cool new take on a starship captain and they fucking killed him.
Yeah. Yeah, a little more by the numbers Star Trek captain who quickly learns you can't be a frontier captain and play it by the book all the time.
I do wonder if they'll figure out I think they could bring him back if they wanted to. Like, you just have the first scene in the show that you want to bring him back, showing him like dead on the floor and some young person pumps some Borg probes into him, reanimates him, and then they cure the Borg. And then it's like, yeah, this is a 5-minute almost comedic scene of him being rescued and now he's the captain again. Boom.
Yeah, I don't know if they have plans for that, but we'll see.
They should. I love Captain Shaw. Captain Shaw is I've enjoyed him almost all season long.
I think they had a real wrote themselves into a corner situation here and decided to just say fuck it when they say that the shuttles aren't networked. They're completely autonomous. I don't buy that. I don't buy that in a fleet that is networking everything. I don't buy that in our modern day where your fridge is connected to the fucking internet, where your toaster is connected to the internet.
It's the internet of things, baby. Together, right? Like your toaster and your fridge and your dishwasher are not going to get information.
But it's 2023. Extrapolate 300 years. I'm pretty sure everything's going to be connected in some way.
Yes, connected. But what is that? So in the 25th century, are your toaster, dishwasher, and replicator going to ever do anything in formation? Yes, they're connected.
Well,
but
no.
Like,
I mean, maybe.
But I get it. You're talking.
But what I'm talking about is ships, right? Like,
yes.
Why would these be autonomous vehicles when none of the other vehicles are autonomous?
Me. You're right, because their function is identical. It's just the same function, just at scale, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they can travel and warp. They have phasers. They perform on
the
same
functions. They're analog. The shuttlecrafts are all analog. They haven't been replaced by digital shuttlecrafts, Jim. They're analog.
Okay, they're old. That's what you're telling me. They're over 25.
They use Betamax tapes to store information on.
They listen to jazz. These jazz listening shuttles want nothing to do with the youth. Yeah, the youth's Wi-Fi network. They don't even have the password. They don't care. They don't want the password.
The USS Defiant Jazz.
Nice. See episode season 3 episode 10 of Picard called Severance.
Exactly.
I find it hilarious when Data is trying to comfort everyone by saying I hope we die quickly, which is definitely lore speaking, right? That's the lore coming through.
I thought he was using his like comic voice, you know, when Joe Piscopo came on and taught him how to do comedy. He was doing a little bit of his vaudeville Data.
Yep.
Like, take my wife, please, you know, kind of.
God. And the very first line in this scene, there are a couple of humorous moments, is Deanna saying, I've never been so happy to see so many wrinkles. Pretty good.
All right.
As Picard walks through the door.
The team that wasn't on the bridge had no idea why, like, they had to be caught up real quick on, like, you know, why are some of us invincible and some of us aren't? And and Beverly's saying, I've never been so relieved. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And Rafi's kind of like springing into action here. She has had nothing to do in the last few episodes, as kind of Worf hasn't either. They get an action scene. Apparently, she really loves killing youths because she is gung-ho about getting out there. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, she's not great. She's not great as a mother. She probably has some resentful feelings toward children. Go out and slaughter.
Cut me out, will ya?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't need nothing but this phaser and my snake leaf pipe.
And then we get to the most glorious scene in all of Star Trek Picard. Geordi takes the shuttle back to his museum to grab the ancient, outdated analog ship, the Enterprise D, to aid them in their next step. The crew is reunited with their old ship, and then they take their stations and head right back to Earth. Oh, I can't tell you how good this felt, seeing the Enterprise D.
I had all these questions, like, literally how? I saw this fucker get blown up, its drive section got blown up, and Geordi's like, it kind of made sense. Like, as soon as he said prime directive, I'm like, oh my God, it was an environmental disaster they had to clean up.
Makes sense. Yep.
So they picked up all the pieces of the saucer, and Geordi, just out of boredom and something to do, has been refurbishing and retrofitting it. And he pulled the drive section from a decommissioned Galaxy class, apparently the USS Syracuse. And here it fucking is.
I mean, this feels like every Star Trek fan's ultimate dream, right? Like, to have this is the ultimate model kit that Geordi gets to work on here.
And have they preserved these sets for the entire time, or because it's my understanding that the old Enterprise sets were gone, but maybe they kept them around. Because this looks like exactly the same ship.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe it replaced the only thing that like. And it's funny because Picard made it. He's like, oh, after all of seeing you all here together and thinking about all the things I've lost, there's the one thing I've missed the most. And he's like carpeting, you know, it's like this commentary uh-huh. about modern Starfleet design. The carpet on the Enterprise D looks really cheap, looks hella cheap.
Sure. Yeah.
Looks like, you know, $50 night.
Hold on. We got to be more specific. Cheap. The carpet on the floor or the carpet on the chairs or the walls? Because...
I was going to go to the floor carpeting, but you're right. All the carpeting looks very like the cheapest shit you'd get from Lowe's or Home Depot. You mm-hmm. know, the cheapest commercial grade. But I don't know. What do you want? A rug carpet on the Enterprise D?
A shag, yeah. Real thick pile.
God, when they were turning the ship on and like, because I was, you know, and it was still dark, and I'm like, oh, they're gonna go dark, and like, but the L cars are just flickering like panel by panel, light by light, everything's mm-hmm. kind of like, and the music was playing, and I don't know, man, like when Geordi and Picard took their posts at the helm and the ops panel, and right. like Deanna's Picard's right there,
make it so, and Geordi's like, yeah.
Oh my God, Picard saying engage. It mm-hmm. just
takes you right back.
Yeah, to a surprising degree. It's just like I'm saying, like that's like this idiot just got my nappy changed and a fresh bottle delight at, because that's all it is. That's all it is. It's uh-huh. just like, it's like my childhood being pumped into my veins. I'm being pandered to. Pandered to.
I'm okay with it. You know, this is how it's going to end for this. Well, at least this configuration of the crew, certainly. And I'm cool with that. I did want one more big moment like this. I will ask a few pertinent questions, given that there are like roughly 7-8 people running this ship now. The crew complement on the Enterprise, as I understand it, is roughly 1,000, a little over 1,000. People mm-hmm. can they run this ship with only a few people up on the bridge?
I think so. I even think there's lines in the technical manual about how small of a skeleton crew you can run the ship from, because it's got so many advances in automation and whatnot.
Okay,
I think so.
I might give them that. Here's my other question: they're heading into maybe their most ferocious and doomed and stupid battle I can imagine.
Yeah.
Do they like, maybe they should be putting all their extra power into the shields or the phasers or something instead of running like secondary hull lighting in a ship that is completely empty? But what do I know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's LED. That uses a fraction of their warp
Fair.
Force power.
You get like 3 watts from all that. Whatever. One more thing. Do you think the red and blue is still there? And has it gone bad yet?
Ooh. It definitely have gone bad, but I bet Beverly, she's gonna start whipping up a new batch, because that's the thing, is like, I think they can move this ship around the galaxy. I don't think they can effectively fight it.
They kind of
lampshaded it by this doesn't have a full complement of its torpedoes and not all of its phaser banks are active and whatnot. But like, yeah, I don't. Because like Geordi's like, there, someone says, how we take on the whole fleet with a shuttlecraft, and Geordi's like, I got a better idea, and his better idea is the Enterprise D.
It's not a
which
better
is
idea.
Like, it's better,
but it's still terrible.
Right.
You
yeah.
can't just fly
it's
right
like,
after
you
this
go
fleet.
From
They're
fighting
a
hurricane with a fart to fighting it with a can of compressed air.
Yeah,
you have made a modest improvement in your ability to fight the hurricane. It's not going to matter. But we knew that at the beginning of the episode. We talked about how this has got to be some kind of Jack or Girardi mm-hmm. type of thing, or the Federation is just fucked.
And I'm sure it will be supported by the Enterprise there at Earth, but I don't. They certainly can't take on the fleet themselves. It's impossible.
No. I don't care how analog they are.
Yeah.
There's a joke in here that I think only real Star Trek nerds get.
Is it about Beverly?
It's about Worf and the destruction of the Enterprise E being his fault. And I looked this up on Memory Alpha, and apparently in 2030-80, Picard stepped down from being captain of the Enterprise E to lead the Romulan resettlement effort that was, you know, the aftermath that that's dealt with in Picard 1. Mm-hmm. There is a show that is on Paramount Plus called Star Trek Prodigy, an animated series, I think. And they showed in its latest season the Enterprise E derelict with like big holes in it, but it's like still intact, but it's like clearly disabled and abandoned. And then there was a comic book series that posited that Captain Worf was the commander of the Enterprise E. So, but no one really knows what happened. And this and Geordi just being like, well, of course we know we can't use the Enterprise E, and everyone kind of looking back to Worf is a joke about like he's the last known captain, and the last time we saw it is all shot full of holes and blown up, and him just coming back like, well, you can't blame me. It's just like, I think it's a pretty funny joke, and gotcha. I kind of got it without looking into the background. It's like, oh, he probably is the captain. And
yeah, the last time I remembered E was, I think, in Nemesis, right? Like they ram it into Shinzon's ship or whatever to try and stop
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so I thought that was funny. What was the Beverly joke?
Oh, I thought it was hilarious that everybody's like, take your stations. And Beverly's station is a tricorder, just standing kind of off to the side.
Off of Worf's right hand, yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, if she takes her station, she goes like six decks down to the sick bay mm-hmm. and just waits mm-hmm. for nobody to show up. Mm-hmm.
There are multiple science stations in the back of that, you know, half the time Data would go there when he wasn't doing ops. It's like you gotta put her somewhere. And Deanna's sitting in the auxiliary seat, so
mm-hmm. the Picard's left. Yep.
Ready to feel things for him.
Uh-huh. That's where we leave it, man. They're going straight into the lion's teeth. We'll see how this all shakes out next episode.
I have a couple other random questions. What shapes were the fleet taking? They were taking very distinct circular shapes.
I think it's like when you type 58008 into a calculator and turn it upside down. I think that's what they were writing in the sky.
His boobs. I thought you were going to go. They're spelling things out in the Wingding font.
That too. Yeah.
But like, are they suggesting there's some kind of Borg script? Like, is it supposed to spell something if you were a big enough nerd that you could decipher it?
Yeah, it spells.
Are these some kind of three-dimensional, four-dimensional optimum space armada shapes? I don't know.
Oh, I just came up with a brilliant idea for the season finale. It doesn't have to necessarily be Jack that comes in and save them. We've also got the Q. We've also got Q hanging out there. We could just say, you know what? Fuck it. Let's bring everybody back again.
But Q's dead.
Let's do this.
He died.
Can you ever kill an immortal being? I don't think so.
Well, and the continuum as a whole, like even if you kill a Q, there's the whole, yeah.
You run him through the transporter. Now he's like part Q, part Borg. And he comes back and he saves everybody.
He used the power of Q to manifest him as a human. You run him through the transporter to take out whatever Q cancer he's got and install the Borg components on him. And then he just, uses the power. He blows the power of the Q through the Borg's pipes.
This is the worst idea.
He can't handle it.
This suggestion was entirely facetious, but
I mean, there is season 1 and 2 of Picard. There's worse ideas.
That's what I mean. Like,
they turned Picard into a horrifying golem.
Uh-huh.
3 years ago, so there's a lot of floor left. There's a lot of floor.
True.
I can't even begin to predict. I will say that if they resolve a Borg plot without even mentioning or thinking or gesturing to Agnes Jurati, I'm going to be kind of pissed.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I don't think
it's a concept you just fucking introduced last season at the tail end of last season, no less. So, like, I feel like they got to honor it in some way, but that's the only other expectation that I have on it. You think they're going to have the balls to kill any of the original crew? Like, is Michael Dorn be like, I am not getting this shit glued on my face ever again. I'll do voiceover work on.
Kill me. Yeah.
Lower decks, but like, you got to take me out.
No, I think if anybody's going to die, it's going to be Rafi.
I think he's going to die. It's going to be Picard. I do think Patrick Stewart's done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want
not
to
out
see
of malice. He's just fucking old as shit. Like, you know, he's going to real life die if you keep rolling the dice like this. So
sure,
But now, what's your appetite for Star Trek Legacy starring the bridge crew of the Enterprise D with maybe Riker?
I mean, I could go for it. I just want it to be better than most of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah. And it's like, they already have Strange New Worlds, which is doing a very good job of just being classic Star Trek. So, like, what would this be like a comedy series or like a dramedy? Because, like, yeah, like, like, in my mind, you just make Riker the captain. You bring in Crash and Geordi's daughters. You bring in some, you know, younger, like, ensign level bridge crew, and it's a training ship or something, you know? They're all court
martialed.
And
just be Riker? I mean, what? So Deanna would be there training the next counselor.
Deanna would be there.
Beverly would be training the next doctor.
My idea was, like, every one of the bridge crew is, like, court martialed for their. For the insane shit that they pulled in the first half of this, and it's kind of like one of those backwards punishments where they're going to throw you into the Briar Patch, which is the Enterprise D, and it's going to be a training ship for future cadets and whatnot or something. But then, like, what do you do with that? You just travel to the galaxy and get an advantage. That's what Strange New Worlds is doing. So,
yeah,
can they do two things in the same medium at the same time? I don't know.
It's hard for me to imagine a scenario where the Enterprise D is allowed to continue in service. Like, the technology has moved so far beyond the D at this point. That's like training on a World War II ship right now and saying this is applicable to modern.
What if I told you the U.S. Navy maintains a sailing ship, a wooden sailing ship to train cadets on even today?
To train?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, it's like an exclusive thing. It's not like a real, but
oh, it's like a hobby thing, like a Navy hobby thing.
The other thing is the Navy announced that they're bringing back sextant training. Like, they want their sailors to be able to navigate by the stars in case GPS goes down, which makes a lot of sense. Like, kind of crazy that they ever got away from that, but...
Yeah,
I don't know. The Navy is one thing is just crazy fucking traditional.
Sure.
I mean, here in the 25th century, they're still playing pipes like they did in the 1600s to issue orders. Like, that's how fucking traditional we're talking, so...
Fair.
Yeah. What else? Is that gonna do it for us?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. We're playing an elaborate season long joke on people by giving out an email address. apparently, we're never going to consider it because we always run out of time. I did get from the press team that we will get the season finale in time to get it out in advance. It's going to be very short notice turnaround, but we will be able to turn it around, so we will have it out date and time of the release of the finale. I can't wait to see it. Picard at baldmove.com if you want to blow our hair back with something. if you want to, I don't know, if you want to try to take us over with your Borg implants, whatever. Twitter.com/baldmove is how you follow all our other release stuff, because, boy, we're doing all kinds of stuff all the time. And if you'd like to get this feed only ad-free and a ton more bonus content, check out how to support us at support.baldmove.com. That's it. We'll see how they get out of this crazy situation in the finale of Star Trek Picard next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.